Alrighty, Shabbat Shalom, and Shabbat Shalom to all those who are watching with us today. Have a very encouraging message today called Angels Among Us. And, you know, in the New World Order of Satan, and most of the focus in the end time is about what's going on now in world events and all the bad things and world war and, you know, Mark of the Beast and all those things. And I think that sometimes that we forget that Yahweh has his cherubs in this time more than ever. Matter of fact, if you look in the book of Revelation, there's more angelic activity going on with Yahweh's cherubs in Revelation than any other book in the Bible, and maybe all the Bible combined. I mean, everywhere you see it. You see the cherubs working because it is a fight against good and against evil. And so today I want to show you that, I want to show you all about the cherubs that Yahweh has, what they do, what they've done, and what is really the message for us in the times we're living in today. So I want to start in Hebrews 13 and verse 2. In Hebrews 13 and verse 2 it says, "Do not forget hospitality, for by this some unknowingly took in cherubs as guests." Wow. So, you know, I've had the blessing in my life more than once of seeing a cherub of Yahweh. I told the story what happened last year, the first time I was going to Mount Sinai, where my driver wound up, for whatever reason, got arrested there at the border, and I was kind of stuck, and I turned around, there's a man there, you know, looking right at me and calling me with his finger, and to follow him. And wow, he went in front of the lines, and how, like I said, everyone that saw him, the police, just their mouths dropped and they stamped the passport right away without even the normal procedures. They opened up the other side of the road for us to go in front of everybody. And then at the end, when I got to the Saudi side, the man and the vehicle simply disappeared. So that, you know, was recent. There's another story I'll tell in a little bit that I've also, cherub that appeared in my room. But I know for some people, or most people that probably have never seen a cherub, don't realize that they're there whether you see them or not. And sometimes, you know, where you're showing hospitality, like it says here or something, it might seem like a human being. You might not even realize that it's a cherub. So, but the scriptures here that can't be broken. So very, very clearly, do not forget hospitality for by some unknowingly took in cherubs as guests. So a cherub in the Bible, it's called a malek, you know. In the Greek, they call it angelos. That's where the word angel comes from the Greek. But in the Hebrew, the word is malek, which is messenger. They are messengers and they're cherubs. And there's hundreds of thousands, if not millions of them. We really don't know exactly the number of them. But when we look at the space of what they're doing and how they're covering the earth and everywhere, there possibly could be millions of them. And Yahweh has them throughout the earth to protect us and help us in time of need. So you just never know when. I remember one time where I was at a Feast of Tabernacles and we were in the car and we were at a red light. It was a brand new rental car and the light turned green and I stepped on the gas and the car didn't move. And I'm wondering what's going on. I'm stepping on the gas and it's not moving. Then all of a sudden a car comes like 100 miles an hour the other way, breaks the red light, you know, passes through their red light, and whew, and we're like, wow, if my car would have went, I would have been dead. And then as soon as that car passed after going through the red light, my car starts going again. So did a cherub somehow stop that? Somebody did. I know Yahweh did some way, whether it was a cherub, who knows. But the point is that these messengers are there to help us in our time of need, just like what happened to me in Mount Sinai last year. And they're always there whether you see them or not. So you got to remember that. This is why I say this is very. This message is very inspiring, because even if you've never seen it, don't take for granted because they are there. 2 Kings verse 6, or I'm sorry, 2 Kings 6, chapter 6, and verse 8 says, "And the king of Syria was fighting against Israel and rose up with a servant, saying, 'At such and such place shall be my camp.'" So here it is. The background of the story is that the king of Syria is fighting against Israel, right? And they have all these people over there. Let's drop down to verse 14. "And he sent horses and chariots and a heavy army. And they came in by night and surrounded the city." So they're stronger than Israel, and you would probably be scared too. "And the servant of the man of the Elohim rose up early and went out. And behold, as an army was surrounding the city in horses and chariots. And his young man said to him, "Alas, my master, what shall we do?" Wow, right? Their life is in the balances there. And he said, "Do not fear, for those with us are more than those with them," right? Just like it talks about in the New Testament. You know, the power in us is greater than the power in them. And then in verse 17, and Elisha prayed and said, "I beg you, O Yahweh, open his eyes that he may see." And Yahweh opened the eyes of the young man, and he looked, and behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. Wow, I love that story. Because like I said, even though you don't see them, it doesn't mean they're not there. And Elisha's there, you know, a man of Yahweh that has more insight, right, because of his position as a prophet there. And he's seeing them, and the man's all worried, what are we going to do? And he's like, you know, Yahweh, please, just show him. And then Yahweh opens his eyes, and we see it all around. How much we wish in our life sometimes, right, when you're going through a trial, you're going through a struggle or whatever, that Yahweh can open our eyes and see the cherubs that are all around us. Because they are always there. Like I said, even if we can't see them, they are always there. Let's go to Genesis 19. Genesis 19. And this is the story of Lot, right? So it starts out, and the two cherubs came into Sodom at evening, and Lot was sitting at the gate of Sodom. And Lot saw, and he rose to meet him and bowed his face to the earth. And he said, "Behold now, my masters, please turn in your servant's house and lodge and wash your feet and rise early and go your way." And they said, "No, for we will lodge in the street." And he much urged them, and they turned into him and came into his house, and he made a feast for them, and he baked unleavened matzos, and they ate, right? This is during unleavened bread, during Passover week. Before they had laid down, even the men of the city, the men of Sodom, circled the house from the young to the aged and the people from its limits, these evil, wicked men in Sodom. And they called to Lot and said to him, "Where are the men who came to you tonight? Bring them out to us that we may have sex with them," right? The homosexuality, the evilness going on there. Drop down to verse 9. And they said, "Stand back." And they said, "This one came in to visit, and must he always judge? Now we will do evil to you rather than to them," to the cherubs. And they pressed on the man upon Lot violently and drew near to break the door. But the men put out their hand, the two cherubs, and brought Lot into them, into the house, and shut the door. And they struck the men at the door of the house with blindness, from the small to the great, and they struggled to find the door. And what we see here, just like in chapter 18, many times these cherubs appear as human beings, right? Because when they're in their glorious days as a cherub, you can't see them. You can't see spirit, you know, and they are a spirit being. So when they appear, it's usually as a human. And the men said to Lot, "Who still is here with you? Bring out of this place your sons and your sons-in-law and your daughters and whoever belongs to you in the city. For we are about to destroy this place, for the cry of them is great before Yahweh, and Yahweh has sent us to destroy it." Wow. And Lot went out to speak to his sons-in-law, those taking his daughters, and he said, "Rise up, go from this place, for Yahweh is about to destroy the city." And he seemed as one joking to his sons-in-law, right? Wow, seemed as one joking. And doesn't it seem that way to us sometimes? I know when I share the stories with the brethren of the miracles that Yahweh has done in my life, like seeing the cherub bless you and whatever, the brethren are amazed, they're encouraged, they're excited. But many times if I share these stories with people that are non-believers, they think you're either making it up or that you're misunderstanding or you're maybe going cuckoo, whatever it is. So they don't understand because they don't have the faith to believe. So these angels, these cherubs, they're there to protect us. But some people that are faithless and don't want to believe. So as Yahweh does more miracles, just like healing, right? We're seeing major healings in the last couple of years in our congregation. Not that long ago in Africa, the story they told me about Elder Kolang, you know, that was bit by the snake. And we know last year that happened at the Bible school with Elder Pong, that was bitten by one of the most dangerous scorpions in the world. I think they said second in the whole world, and was prayed for and he was okay. So you got to realize this, that you don't want to be one of these faithless people. And you've got to get in your mind and understand the fact that you're not physically seeing cherubs doesn't mean they're not around you. And that's why we don't want to have any kind of spirit of fear. Because how can you have a spirit of fear when Yahweh has his cherubs around you? And they're there to help us in some of the most dire circumstances, right? So when we pray to Yahweh, many times we don't realize that it could be his cherub is the one that's helping us, even if we don't see them. Genesis 21, and this is the story with Hagar, right? When Sarah doesn't want, as Ishmael is growing up, she doesn't want him to inherit with Isaac, and she tells Abraham, you know, get rid of this lady. In verse 10 of Genesis 21, and she said to Abram, drive away the slave girl and her son, for the son of the slave girl shall not inherit with my son, with Isaac, right? So Abraham's got to send her away, and then let's look what happens here. Drop down to verse 14. And Abraham started up early in the morning and took bread and a skin of water and gave them to Hagar, putting them on her shoulder and the child, and sent her away. And she left and wandered in the wilderness of Beersheba. And the water from the skin was finished, and she put the boy under one of the shrubs. And she went and sat down opposite him about a bow shot away. For she said, let me not see the death of the boy. And she sat opposite and raised her voice and wept. So here it is, right? She ran out of the water, didn't have food. It's hot out there. I've been there many times. It's the desert and down in Beersheba. And here it was, like, she's just saying, that's it. You know, there's nobody to help me. And she cried. And Elohim heard the voice of the young boy, and the messenger of Elohim called to Hagar out of the heavens and said to her, what ails you, Hagar? Do not fear, for Elohim has heard the voice of the boy there where he is. Rise up, lift up the boy, and make your hand strong on him, for I will make of him a great nation. And Elohim opened her eyes, and she saw a well of water. And she went and filled the skin with water and gave drink to the young boy. So possibly this is the messenger of Yahweh. Whenever you see the perfect article, the before messenger, it's not just a cherub or an angel, but it is literally Yeshua, who's not a cherub or an angel, but he is a Malach. He is Yahweh's messenger, right? The same as we're going to see. The word Malach is not only used for cherubs, but it is also even used for human beings sometimes. And it's certainly used as Yahweh's messenger, Yeshua, who's an eternal being and Elohim. But over here, it says the messenger helped her and saved her, right? So, like I said, sometimes a messenger can help in the most dire circumstances. Luke chapter 2 and verse 4. Sometimes they're here to give messages, right? Sometimes they're there to give messages, as one did to me. I'll tell you that in a little bit here. Luke 2 and verse 4. It says, and Joseph also went from Galilee out of the city of Nazareth to Judea, to the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because of his being of the house and family of David, to be registered with Miriam, the one having been betrothed to him, his wife, she being pregnant. And it happened, as they were there, the days were fulfilled for her, Miriam, to bear. And she bore her son, the firstborn, and she wrapped him in swaddling clothes and laid him in the manger, right? The manger is the stone cut out where the animals drink out of, because there was no room where they could lodge. And shepherds were in the same region, living in the fields and keeping guard over the flock by night, still today. And behold, a cherub of Elohim came on them, and the glory of Yahweh shone around them, and they feared with a great fear. And the cherub said to them, do not fear, for behold, I proclaim good news to you, a great joy which will be to all the world. For today is born to you in the city of David the Savior, who is Yahweh the Messiah. And that's the way it is in the original Aramaic. It's not added. And this is a sign to you. You will find an infant having been wrapped in swaddling clothes, lying in a manger. And suddenly there was with the cherub a multitude of the heavenly hosts praising Yahweh and singing. Can you imagine that? Having the heavens rolled back like a scroll and seeing that heavenly host there? Glory, and this is what they're saying, praising Yahweh and saying, glory to Yahweh in the highest, and peace on earth, goodwill among men. And it happened as the cherubs departed from them into the heaven, even the men, the shepherds, said to one another, indeed, let us go over to Bethlehem, and let us see this thing occurring, which Yahweh has made known to us, right? So, wow, after that, you better believe they're going to go to Bethlehem, and they're going to see what's going on there. But like I said, at times, sometimes the cherub comes to tell an important message. And that happened to me back in 1999, it was, where I was in my room with my wife. We were sleeping in the night, and all of a sudden, I was woken up. And as I woke up, I looked over, and my wife was out like, you know, completely knocked out. And at the tip of my bed was a silhouette, bright. I could barely even look at it, but I could see it's a silhouette of it looked like, you know, like a man. And the being said that they were a messenger of Yahweh, let me show you the things that must surely come to pass. And then the arm came up, there was a sword in its hand, and there was a grinding stone, and he was putting the sword on the grinding stone, and sparks were coming out. And then he disappeared. And that's at the same time that I had the vision about 911. And that was 2 years before it happened. And a vision is different than a dream. I couldn't have telling you that before having a vision, but I've had several visions. I actually had one recently, I'll tell you about in a second. But only in my life a couple of times I've had a vision. And in the vision, it's not a dream. It's not a dream where you're thinking you're there. You're really there. You're awake and you're there, but it's not really happening. It's a vision. So in this vision, I was in Carteret, New Jersey, where I grew up, and I was in the hotel that's near the turnpike where you get off the exit, the Holiday Inn, and it was some kind of family event that was happening. We were all sitting at the table, and all of a sudden, I see the chandelier shaking, and I wonder what's going on, and everybody starts running for the staircase, and I run out. I go outside, and I look over at New York, and I see the Twin Towers, and they're both shaking, and they both fell. That was 2 years before it actually happened, that Yahweh showed me that. And the one I had recently, this was just a month or maybe 2 months ago, not that long ago, where I had a vision of an earthquake. And literally, when the vision started, the earthquake had just happened, and it was dark, but there was big stones, and there were people under it, but it was a major one. I mean, one of the biggest that ever happened. And I remember trying to push the stones off and thinking, I got to help people that are there. I'm not exactly sure where the earthquake took place, but it was there. And then after the vision happened, I was back in my room, but that was the latest vision that I did have. So sometimes this happens, but this was the messenger that I did see in my room at that time. I wrote it down as soon as it happened so I wouldn't forget any of it, and exposing about 911 2 years actually before it happened. So like I said, sometimes they're there to tell an important message. Acts chapter 10. Verse 1 through 8. And this is what Cornelius, right? When the Gentiles were first coming into the new covenant, being allowed to come into the new covenant. But a certain man, Cornelius by name, was in Caesarea, a centurion of a cohort being called Italiano. Hey, just like myself. I can relate to him. One righteous and fearing Elohim with all his house, both doing many alms to the people and praying continually to Elohim. About the ninth hour of the day, he saw plainly in a vision a cherub of Elohim coming to him and saying to him, Cornelius! And he was staring at him and becoming terrified and said, What is it, Master? And he said to him, Your prayers and your alms went up to a memorial before Elohim. And now send men to Joppa and call for Simon, who is called Peter. This one is lodged with one Simon, a tanner, whose house is by the sea. He will tell you what you must do. And when the cherub speaking to Cornelius went away, calling two of the sons of the household and a devout servant who feared Elohim and obeyed him, and having explained all things to them, he sent them to Joppa. So we see here, right, that in a new situation with the Gentiles, that the angel had to give a message on where to go, the cherub. So that happens sometimes too, right? When a message has to come, it comes by the hand of Yahweh's malachs, Yahweh's messengers, Yahweh's cherubs, or what many people call angels. Acts 27 and verse 20. And this is with the Apostle Paul. Remember when they were in the ship and they were going to be shipwrecked? And what happened right before there, right? I'm going to read it from verse 20 through 25. And as the storm held on for many days, this is a really bad storm that's going on there. Remember, they had to get rid of the stuff that was in the ship because the ship was overturning, and they really thought they were going to die. And as the storm held on for many days, and as no sun was visible, nor moon nor stars, all hope of our surviving was given up. Then no man among them had eaten anything. Then standing up in their midst, Paul said, Truly, O men, if you had listened to me, we would not have set sail from Crete. And we would have been spared this injury and loss. Now, let me counsel you not to be depressed, for not a single life among you will be lost, but only the ship. For tonight stood by me a cherub of the Elohim, of whom I belong and whom I serve, saying, do not fear, Paul. You must stand before Caesar. And behold, Elohim was granted to you all those has granted to you all those sailing with you. Therefore, be cheered, men, for I believe Yahweh that it will be so according to the way it was spoken to me. So, you know, many things we see in Scripture, we don't need a cherub to tell us because the Scripture says it. But you got to believe it. And that's the thing, that the Apostle Paul believed the word of Yahweh. So when Yahweh sent a messenger to him, it was no problem for them. But sometimes they come to give messages of encouragement to us when things look very bleak, right? So there's all different reasons why cherubs come to people. Acts 5 in verse 12. Sometimes it's intervene because things are going wrong, like what happened to me when I don't know what would have happened if that cherub didn't come and take me to Saudi Arabia. Would I have maybe had to go back? Would I have, you know, I don't know what would have happened at that point. But sometimes they come to intervene in the situation when it's out of human control. Acts 5, starting in verse 12. Acts 5 in verse 12. Says, and many miraculous signs and wonders among the people took place through the hands of the apostles, and they were all with one passion in Solomon's porch, right? The Yahweh sanctuary. And of the rest, no one dared to touch them, but the people greatly magnified them, right? Because they saw all the miracles and the healings. And more were added, those believed in Yahweh, both men and women. So as to carry out the sick in the streets and to place them on cots and mattresses, that at the coming of Peter, Kepha, if even his shadow might overshadow some of them. And also the multitude came together from the cities around Jerusalem, bringing sick ones and those being tormented by unclean spirits, who were all healed. The high priest and all those who were with him, who were of the doctrine of the Sadducees, were filled with envy. And they placed hands on the apostles and seized and bound them in prison. But a cherub of Yahweh opened the doors of the prison during the night, and leading them out, he said, go, and standing in the sanctuary, speak to the people all the words of life. Can you imagine how amazing that must have been? Here it was, they think, we're locking you up, we're putting you in here. And the cherub just comes and opens the door and takes them out. And hearing, they went into the sanctuary about dawn and taught. But having come near, the high priest and those with him called together the Sanhedrin and all the elderhood of the sons of Israel. And they sent to the jail to have them brought. But having come near, the officers did not find them in the prison, and returning, they reported, saying, indeed, we found the jail having been shut with all security, and the guards outside standing before the doors, but opening, we found nobody inside. And when they heard these words, both the priest and the sanctuary commander and the chief priest were in doubt concerning them, what this might be, right? They didn't think a cherub came and opened the door for them. But having come, one reported to them, saying, behold, the men who you put in the prison are in the sanctuary, standing and teaching the people. So that's my point. You know, sometimes when I'm going to places and people say, wow, it's, you know, there's war going on there. Like now in Burundi, there's civil war with Burundi, or war with Burundi in Rwanda going on. Down in South Sudan, there's a really dangerous situation there with civil war going on in Sudan. And sometimes people say, oh, don't go, you know, wait, or whatever. But what I say is, Yahweh, help the person who tries to get in your way when you are on a divine commission from Yahweh. I am Yahweh's ambassador, right? I'm going out as his ambassador to bring a message from him directly. I never go on my own. I pray Yahweh opens the doors where he sends me, and Yahweh help the person that would get in my way. I've seen people drop dead that have tried to get in the way of the work of Yahweh. Believe me, I never prayed for it, but it happens because that's the way it is. So sometimes Yahweh will actually, like here in Acts 5, he'll actually send his cherubs to make sure that man doesn't get in the way. Whether it's opening a door or whether it's protecting them. We actually had a brother a couple of years ago in South Sudan that literally was shot and the bullet bounced off of him. The bullet literally bounced off of him. I forget if it was his Bible it bounced off of. I think that's what it was. It bounced off the Bible. But a bullet doesn't bounce off a Bible. So we know that there was some kind of angelic activity happening there. So, if Yahweh has a job for you, no one is going to stop you. So, what I want to read you now is, I want to read you some modern day stories of testimonies of angels. These are all true stories, almost all of them, except for one I personally know of, and I can vouch they are all true that happened. So I just want to read these to you. These are all from modern times now to show you that this isn't something just from the Bible. Sometimes people say that. Why in the Bible were there miracles? And why in the Bible do we see healings? And why in the Bible do we see angels or cherubs appearing to people? Why don't we see that today? And I say, where are you? I've seen all of it. I've seen all of it in my life. I've seen many, many things happen in Israel, casting out demons and miracles and healings and all different kinds of things. So, it happens. And you have to be expecting it, though. And you have to believe it. You have to have the faith to believe it. So let me read you here these testimonies, just that we see it's not just something for Bible times. And this first one is from a sister called Debbie, who... She actually was retrieving her little babies at her parents' house and heading home. And it was pretty late at night. It was 11:30 at night. And she was driving an old clunker car that she had. And among the problems with the car, the gas gauge didn't work. So halfway home, the car started to putter and Debbie realized she was out of gas. She pulled off the ramp and happened to be one that was slightly uphill. And now no gas in the car. Almost at the top of the exit, the car died. And there was absolutely nothing around except empty fields. And she could see distance, maybe like a half a mile away, she could see the lights of a truck stop. With no cars in sight, she didn't know what to do. The kids were asleep. And walking miles with carrying two kids in the middle of the night was not a good option for her. And this was before cell phones. So this was, maybe 20, 30 years ago. So there was no cell phone. She couldn't call for help. So she put her head on the steering wheel. And while saying a short and anxious prayer, she hadn't even finished the prayer, and there's a knock on the window. When she looked up, she saw a clean-cut man standing there out of nowhere. He motioned for her to roll down the window, and she was surprised, but wasn't even the slightest bit afraid, even though normally she would have been terrified. The young man was dressed well and groomed. He didn't ask if she needed help, but just told her, put the car in neutral, and he'd help her get over the hill to the place where she had to go for the gas. He was so nice, and she thanked him and followed his instructions. The car started moving, and she steered it toward the lights of the truck stop and turned around to yell, thank you, but the young man was gone. The area was completely remote. There was absolutely nowhere he could have gone that quickly. She didn't even know where he came from, as he didn't even have a vehicle that he was in. Debbie's car continued to roll down the hill until it reached the truck stop. She was able to get the gas she needed, and the kids remained sound asleep. But this is the interesting part, which she said afterward, that she always trusted in Elohim to take care of them. But in relating that story about the angel helping her, many times to her children, who are now adults, they know for a fact that angels do exist and are sent to us if we just believe. She said, I always thought it was so amazing that we were sent someone who I would trust instinctively without question. Since that incident, I've come to believe that we probably encounter angels all the time and take for granted who they really are. And that's Hebrews 13:2. I think they come in all shapes and sizes, young and old, and sometimes when we least expect them. The next story is for a man I personally know. He was a deacon in the Church of God. His name was Torney. And this guy was young. He was probably in his late 30s at the time. He had a wife and a couple of kids, and he was a very avid sports player and swimmer. And one day he told the story that he was swimming and the tide was really bad and pulled him out and pulled him under where he couldn't hold up any longer. He went under. He thought he was going to die. And as he was drowning, all of a sudden he felt a hand on his back that grabbed him and pulled him up and dragged him out of the water. And as he was on the side of the beach, still on his knees, choking, and turned around to thank the man, there was nobody there. Not even footprints in the sand. Immediately after he was brought there, nobody was there completely. It was a cherub that pulled him out of the water because nobody was even in the water when he went under. This was another lady that I knew personally. She was actually even part of our congregation when we started our whole fellowship. And again, it was in the Worldwide Church of God. And it was when she was in college with a van load of girls. They were up in the mountains in a deserted road, and the van broke down. It overheated and would not work at all. Wouldn't even start. It was winter, the ladies were scared, and it was cold, and they didn't know what to do. And then from nowhere, they were way out in the middle of nowhere, a man comes up to the window, knocks on the window, all dressed in white, and he asked if everything was okay. And they told him the car was broken, and they needed to be towed. The man went to the front of the car, and all he did was put his hand on the hood. He just touched it and said, everything's going to be okay, just start it. Immediately, the car started, and the man disappeared. So they knew right away that it was a cherub that Yahweh sent. And the last one I want to share, it's another family that I knew in the Church of God. And the man who actually left the congregation, his name was Chuck. And he left the congregation, he started working on Shabbat. So he was making deliveries for a company. And he had this delivery and he was going and he couldn't find it. He couldn't find where it was. So all of a sudden he pulled over, he saw this office building, he saw a light on, he pulled over, and the building was open, there was nobody inside, he's walking around looking, and all of a sudden this man comes up to him from nowhere, and turns and he looks at him, and he says, Chuck, what are you doing here? You know it's the Sabbath. And the guy, Chuck, didn't know this man, he didn't know who he was, and he's looking, why? How did he know my name? Why would he say that? So he told him, you know, he was lost. So the man writes down directions. He says, okay, just follow my directions. He writes it down. Pretty long directions. He was about, you know, maybe 20, 30 minutes away from where he had to go. And he follows the directions exactly how he had to go. He gets, it's a residential house with no street, road where the house was. He knocks on the door, gives the package to the man. And the man looks at the package and says, how on earth did you ever find me? He says, what are you talking about? He says, the address on this package is not my address. How did you find me here? And then he knew that the man who wrote down the directions on where he was to go was an angel, was a cherub, because how else would he know how to give directions on how to get there? So this happens a lot more than we think. And like I said, I could sit here with a whole message just going over stories of people seeing cherubs and cherubs coming, but one thing we know is it definitely is true, and they are there in the end time. Let's go to Revelation chapter 2 and 3, because actually we know there's seven congregations in Revelation, right? My book goes over this. They're historical, and they're seven end time congregations. My book, The Gates of Hell Shall Not Prevail Against Her, goes over this. But for the congregation, each one has a special cherub to them. Chapter 2 and verse 1, to the messenger of the congregation of Ephesus write, right? The messenger there. Drop down to verse 8. And to the messenger of the congregation of Smyrna write, drop down to verse 12. And to the messenger of the congregation in Pergamos write, right? Drop down to verse 18. And to the messenger of the congregation in Thyatira write. Then we go to chapter 3, verse 1. And to the messenger of the congregation in Sardis write. These things says the one having the seven spirits of Elohim and the seven stars, right? Which are the seven congregations. Then drop down to verse 7, to the messenger of the congregation of Philadelphia. And even verse 14, even Laodicean has a cherub or an angel for them, the messenger of the congregation of Laodicean. So each end time congregation has a messenger watching over them. So no matter what kind of spiritual state they're in, at least they have a messenger that's helping them, or sometimes helping go through, you know, the trial that you need to get out of that bad spiritual state. I told you there's more angelic activity, more cherubs in the book of Revelation than any other book in the Bible. Revelation 8 in verse 2. Revelation 8 in verse 2. Says, and I saw the seven cherubs who stood before Elohim, and seven trumpets were given to them. And another cherub came and stood on the altar having a golden censer. And many types of incense were given to him that he should give them with the prayers of the saints on the golden altar before the throne. And the smoke of the incense went up with the prayers of the saints out of the hand of the cherub before Elohim. And the cherub took the censer and it filled with the fire of the altar and cast it to the earth, and sounds and thunders and lightnings and earthquakes occurred. And the seven cherubs, having the seven trumpets, prepared themselves that they might trumpet, right? So this is what it is. Right now, we're seeing, because Satan is bringing his kingdom to the earth, and Yahweh's going to allow it for 42 months, and most of the, you know, spiritual things we're going to see are not good. We're going to see the lying signs and wonders. We're going to see different things. We're going to see the persecution on the saints. But this is why a message like this is important and inspirational, because in the end, there are cherubs there, and those cherubs take over, and those cherubs are the ones that are going to win. And even here, as we go to Revelation 12 and verse 6, right? The woman fled into the wilderness where she had a place, and having been prepared from Elohim that she might be nourished there 1,260 days. And look in verse 7. And war occurred in heaven. Michael, the archangel, and his cherubs making war against the dragon, and the dragon and his cherubs made war. So this is what we see. We are not going to have war with Satan or his demons, but Michael sure is, and the other cherubs. So they're fighting. Yahweh doesn't expect us to fight. He expects us to fight ourselves. He expects us to fight our human nature. He expects us to overcome in our life where we need to. He doesn't expect us to have to fight demons. Now, granted, in my life, on multiple occasions, I've had the opportunity of casting out demons. And sometimes, as an elder, Yahweh has to do that. We do have to protect our life from demonic activity so demons don't enter us or our family. We want to break generational curses that could be demonic in nature. But as far as literally fighting demons, that is going to be for Yahweh's cherubs. But they did not have strength, nor yet was place found for them in heaven. And the great dragon was cast out, the old serpent, being called the devil and Satan. He, deceiving the whole inhabitable world, was cast out to the earth, and his messengers were cast out with him. And I heard a great voice in heaven which said, now is come the salvation and the power and the kingdom of our Elohim and the dominion of his Messiah. Because the accuser of our brethren, right? The accuser of our brethren is Satan. We don't want to be working for him. The one who accuses them day and night before Elohim. The accuser of our brethren is cast out. The one who accuses them day and night before Elohim. And they overcame him because of the blood of the Lamb and because of the word of their testimony, and they did not love their soul even until death, right? So we don't have to worry about it because we know it's not this fleshly body we're trying to save or hold on to. It's the spiritual body. Because of this, be glad, the heavens and those dwelling in them, for woe to those dwelling on the earth and in the sea, because the devil came down to you having great anger, knowing his time is short. And never forget that as these things are happening. Yes, we have a few more years left. Nobody knows how many. Is it 3 or 5? Is it 5 or 10? Or even a little more than that? Who knows? Only Yahweh knows, but that time is short. The time is absolutely short, and we want to make sure this is what we're focused on, that in the end, Yahweh wins the victory. His cherubs are fighting for him, and we don't have to worry. The Yahweh's cherubs are going to protect us through this. Revelation 14, in verse 6 through 12. This is also what we see the cherubs doing in the end time here. And I saw another cherub flying in mid heaven, and with blood, having the everlasting good news to proclaim to those dwelling on the earth, even to every nation and tribe and language and people, saying in a great voice, fear Elohim and give glory to him, because the hour of his judgment is come. Also worship him who has made the heavens and the earth and the sea and the springs of water. And another cherub followed, saying, the great city Babylon has fallen because of the wine, as the anger of a fornication has made all the nations to drink. And a third cherub followed them, saying in a great voice, if anyone worships the beast and its image and receives a mark on his forehead or in his hand, he also will drink of the wine of the anger of Yahweh, having been mixed undiluted in the cup of his wrath. And he will be tormented by fire and brimstone before the holy cherubs and before the Lamb. And the smoke of their torment will rise forever and ever. And those worshiping the beast in its image have no rest night and day, even if anyone receives the mark of its name. Here is the patience of the sanctified ones. Here are the ones keeping the commandments of Yahweh in the faith of Yeshua. So this is why we got to stay away from all this mark of the beast technology. This is why we got to get rid of those phones that track you and the phones that mess with the brain waves in your brain and that brainwash people 24 hours a day through the internet. Because in the end, this is serious stuff and Satan knows it. And Satan is trying to get the whole world to worship him. And we have to realize that it may look bleak, just like the Shemitah year that just passed, right? And what are we going to eat in the seventh year? But look at all the blessings that Yahweh gave in that year. Look at, here we are, in our second year later, and we still have at least a year of food left, maybe 2 years. I mean, it's amazing. The more we're eating it, the more it just sits there. It doesn't go anywhere. And it's, boys, it's saving us a lot on food bills too. But it's showing us we do not have to worry, right? That Yahweh is there for us, and his cherubs are here on this earth to protect us. Revelation 22 and verse 6. Revelation 22 and verse 6. And he said to me, these words are faithful and true, and Yahweh Elohim, the holy prophet, sent his cherub to show his slaves what must happen quickly. So the cherub came to John, and he's showing this book of Revelation, all of this vision that is our time now, that the book of Revelation has been opened. And again, Yahweh used one of his messengers. He used one of his cherubs to do this. So cherubs are everywhere. They're everywhere in Scripture. They're everywhere in the world. They're everywhere in our life today. We just have to recognize that they are there, and we have to believe it in faith. But I want to show another aspect of this. Because in the Bible, the word Malak, like I said, it's not only for cherubs. And sometimes the word Malak that's used for cherub, you know, or angel at times, is also used for a human being. So 2 Kings 5. 2 Kings 5. In verse 8 through 10. 2 Kings 5 through 8 through 10. And this is the story with Elisha, with Nahum, remember? The soldier that had the leprosy. And look what happens. It happened when Elisha, the man of the Elohim, heard the king of Israel and tore his garments. He sent to the king saying, why have you torn your garments? Let him come now to me, and he shall know that there is a prophet in Israel. And Nahum came with his horses and with his chariot and stood at the door of the house of Elisha. And Elisha sent a messenger to him saying, go and you shall wash 7 times in the Jordan, and your flesh shall return to you, and you shall be clean. So he sent for him to go and wash 7 times in the Jordan, but he sent a messenger to tell him that. And the word is Malak. So here it is. He didn't send a cherub or an angel to him. He sent a human being. I'm not going to go into all the scriptures here. We see when David is coming, when he's being told about Saul being killed, the same word is used, a messenger. A messenger runs to him. So many times, or, you know, several times at least in scripture, that the word Malak is used for a human being. So a messenger of Yahweh is not just a cherub, but it also can be a human being. Let's go to Malachi. Malachi, that's where it comes from. My messenger, right? Malachi is my messenger. So the book of Malachi, chapter 3 and verse 1. And look what he says. Behold, I am sending my messenger, my Malachi. And he will clear the way before me. And the master whom you are seeking shall suddenly come to his sanctuary, even the messenger of the covenant in whom you delight. Behold, he comes, says Yahweh of hosts. So this is talking about John the Baptist, right? So John the Baptist is called Malachi, he's called my messenger, he's called a Malak. If you go back one chapter here to chapter 2 of Malachi in verse 7, he says, for the lips of the priest shall guard knowledge, and they should seek the Torah from his mouth, for he is the messenger of Yahweh of hosts. Wow, same word Malak is used. So now what is this word used for? Those who bring the good news and bring the Torah are called Malaks. They're Yahweh's messengers, right? Just like angels. So the same way I told you, an angel can come in dire time of need. An angel can come to bring an important message, right? But the word Malak that many times is used, because those are Yahweh's messengers, is also used for us as human beings. Galatians 4 in verse 13 and 14. Galatians 4 in verse 13 and 14. Says, but you know the weakness of my flesh. This is the Apostle Paul talking. As I preached the good news to you previously, and you did not despise my trial in my flesh, but you received me like a messenger of Elohim, even as you would Messiah Yeshua himself. So here, the Apostle Paul was saying that he was received just like a Malak from them. He was a messenger of Yahweh, a malach, just like an angel to them he was received. Because of the good news message he brought. So here it is when we look at this. So let's look now, because if human beings are messengers, the big point I want to make in this is not just showing you about angels or cherubs in the Bible, but I want to show you how we can be that messenger. We could be, you know, that angel in somebody's life that's really in need if we keep that as our focus. So let's go back to Hebrews 13. Hebrews 13. Says, let brotherly love remain in you, right? So everything is about love, because Yahweh is love, and without love, you know, we don't have anything. The 1 Corinthians 13, you could have all the fruit in the world, and you could move mountains and prophecies and everything else, speak 100 languages, and if you don't have love in your heart, it doesn't attend for anything. And look, then verse 2 again, do not forget hospitality, but for by this some unknowingly took in cherubs as guests, right? Be mindful of the prisoners as having been bound with them, and those suffering misfortune, as you are human also. So what is he telling us, right? In one sense, he's telling us, you know, be kind to strangers, because it could be an angel or a cherub of Yahweh, you know, that's there, that comes. But then in the next verse, he's telling us, right, that we want to be mindful of prisoners, like we're bound with them, you know, praying as if we're there, and those suffering misfortune, as you are also human. So he wants us to put us in the spot of those people that are going through this. And I said this many times, not all the time when I pray for someone for healing, but many times when I pray for someone for healing, like if they have a bad knee, that when I pray for them for healing, their knee will be healed and my knee will hurt for a day or two or whatever, and then goes out. Sometimes it's been a headache. Sometimes it could be anything, you know. It could, like, so not all the time, but it's happened quite a few times with me when I prayed for someone for healing. I actually, that the infirmity of the person came through me to leave. And as a messenger here, you know, do we think about that? That we can be Yahweh's messengers. We can help people through the infirmities that they're going through. Because you want to know something? If you listen to many, many hundreds of stories of people seeing angels or cherubs in their life, I can pretty much guarantee you that not everyone is completely accurate. Yes, they are true. There is many times that it is a literal cherub or an angel from heaven that has met a person and helped them. I've seen it in my own life. But I believe there's also times that people, because a human being was so kind and so unselfish and so serving, that somebody actually said, wow, that had to be an angel. And in one way, they were. They were a messenger. They were that messenger in time of need, right? So that's what I want to show, that all of us can be that, right? All of us can be that messenger in somebody's life by doing a kind act, by showing Yahweh living in us and sacrificing to help another human being in need, right? Sometimes it could be just giving a smile to the lady at the checkout counter that's going through horror every day and everyone yelling at her and saying things and just giving that smile. Other times it could be doing a good act for somebody, you know. It could just be helping somebody in time of need. Somebody that, needed help, you know. I was in the supermarket that long ago, and the worker there, his box broke open and his things were on the ground. And as I was trying to help pick up, he said, no, you don't have to do that. And I said, no, it's okay. And he just smiled at me and was so happy, you know, like that I was helping him. And sometimes it's those little things like that to make us a true messenger of Elohim. 1 John 3 and verse 10 says, by this the children of Yahweh are distinguished from the children of the devil. Whoever does not practice righteousness and does not love his brother does not belong to Elohim. Because this is the message which you heard from the beginning, that we should love one another, right? Not as Cain, who was of the evil one and killed his brother. And for what did he kill him? Because his works were evil, but those of his brother were righteous. So be not surprised, my brothers, if the world hates you, right? We know that we have passed from death to life because we love the brethren. The one not loving his brother remains in death. And we have to love not only our brother, but we have to even love those who hate us and despitefully use us. Everyone hating his brother is a murderer, and you know that every murderer does not have eternal, everlasting life abiding in him. By this we have known his love toward us, because that one laid down his life for us, and on behalf of the brethren, we are to lay down our lives. But whoever has worldly possessions and sees his brother in need and shuts up his mercy from him, how is the love of Elohim in him? My little children, let us love in word or in tongue. Let us love not in word or in tongue, but indeed in truth. And in this we shall know that we are of the truth and shall persuade our hearts before him. And I saw it even recently, just with my trip to Africa and just sharing with brethren, if anyone wanted to help. And wow, how loving and caring and the brethren are to try to help their fellow brethren. And this is really what makes us that Malak in somebody else's life. Being a true messenger of Elohim is not in our words, but in our action. You know, and we are messengers. We are messengers. Not only that, Isaiah 33 and verse 7, very interesting scripture. It says, "Behold, their heroes cry outside. The envoys or the ambassadors of peace shall weep bitterly." And you know what's interesting about that scripture? The word for ambassador there, envoy or ambassador, is actually Malak. And Malak is used sometimes not just as messenger, but as ambassador, right? So sometimes Malak is translated as ambassador. In 2 Corinthians 5:20, "Then on behalf of Messiah, we are ambassadors. As Elohim is exhorting through us, we beseech on behalf of Messiah, be reconciled to Yahweh." So we know that we are Yahweh's ambassadors. We know it. We're called ambassadors, and we're called messengers, like I just showed there. And messengers are Malaks. I thought that was really, really cool, because as Yahweh's ambassadors for peace, we are to bring a helping hand, like I said, a kind word and a smile, and making a difference in somebody's life. You know, every day before leaving your house, you should pray the daily prayer, like I said, because the daily sacrifice never ended. It just was changed from an animal sacrifice to a prayer sacrifice. And every day before leaving your house, you should be praying to Yahweh to be the daily sacrifice that day. That as you walk outside, yes, we all have things to do. We have jobs to go to and things to buy and everything else. But you should pray to Yahweh every day that if there's somebody in need, if there's somebody in help, that he will open your eyes to see it. And whether it's a little old lady just carrying her bag, or, you know, holding somebody's hand who just went through a great suffering or death in a coffee shop, or whatever it could be, just that little time of you being that Malak, you know, that angel in somebody's life. Because who knows? Who knows how many stories that go on later that somebody may have thought that it was a real angel they saw, and maybe it was you or me. Maybe it was just one of Yahweh's people that was out there just showing love and kindness. And, you know, you see this all the time in the Holocaust. I've seen stories where somebody said the same thing, that somebody that helped them and somebody that, and they thought it could it be an angel or not. And then like 50 years later, they meet that person who saved their life and they're reunited with them. And how wonderful, like I said, and that's why I say, what an encouraging message that in an evil world as we live in, such a sinister, evil, rotten world, that not only are there Yahweh's real cherubs around protecting, but that we can be that, we can participate, we can be the messenger of Yahweh in somebody's life. And think of the lowest point in your life. Think of the time in your life maybe where you are really, really at a low point. And whether it was a family member or a friend or somebody in the congregation that lifted you up, right? And gave you that peace that you needed at that time. And they were like an angel in your life at that time. So, like I said, we don't pay back, we pay forward. That's the way Yahweh's, you know, economy works. It's not about paying back, it's about paying forward. So each of us had that in our life. Every single one of us was at a point in our life where we were down, we were troubled, or we had some kind of sickness or death or something that happened, financial woe. And somebody, whether it was a real cherub from Yahweh or was a human being that stood in the gap there and was that messenger for us, we need to do the same thing. And that's really all our calling is about, right? When we look at bearing fruit, that is what bearing fruit is. That's the fruit that will be born. So yes, we have ministries and we go out and we bring the good news. And of course, that's all part of it. But this is like the basic being a believer one-on-one, just being that messenger or cherub or angel in somebody's life that really needs it that day. It's not just a one-time thing. It's not doing it for show. It's actually being part of us, the way it's part of Yahweh's messengers. Well, think of Yahweh's messengers, right? Because here they are, and they are greater than us. They're spirit beings, and yet they serve us, and they're happy to serve us. Even in our defiled, sinful state, they're still happy to serve us because they know that our ultimate destiny is to be children of Yahweh. The last scripture here is in Matthew 25. Matthew 25. And I'm going to start in verse 31. Matthew 25 and verse 31. It says, "But when the Son of Man comes in His glory and all the holy cherubs with Him, then He will sit on the throne of His glory, and before Him will be gathered all the nations. And He will separate them from one another as the shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. And indeed, He will set the sheep off on His right, but the goats off to the left. Then the King will say to those on His right, 'Come, the blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I hungered and you gave me food to eat. I thirsted and you gave me drink. I was a stranger and you took me in, naked and you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me. I was in prison and you came to me.' Then the righteous will answer, saying, 'Master, when did we see you hungry and fed you, or thirsty and gave you drink? And when did we see you a stranger and took you in, or naked and clothed you? And when did we see you sick or in prison and came to you?' In answering, the King will say to them, 'Truly I say to you, insofar as you did it to the one of these, the least of my brothers, you did it to me.'" Wow. Yahweh loves every human being on the earth. Everyone is part of His creation. And you know what? Everybody in life needs that Malak or that angel sometime. Our job and reward is based on being that Malak every day in somebody's life that needs it. Thinking of others truly in need, not just thinking of herself. We can be that special messenger sent by Yahweh to help fulfill the need of another person praying for help. And you know, there's a program out there called Touched by an Angel. And that's the reason I like that program, because that's what that program is all about. It's about regular, everyday people that are in need, and Yahweh sending His messenger to intervene in their life in the simplest of ways and help those people there. And you know something? The lady that's in there, Roma Dowry, the one who plays the angel, I actually met her a couple of years ago. And she actually said that thousands of people have written through the years and have said that how much that program and those inspiring programs have helped their life and sometimes even saved them from suicide. And they used to write and tell all the miracles, real miracles that happened from watching one of those episodes. So Yahweh works in mysterious ways and through mysterious ways. And we want to make sure that we're not neglecting that point every day of our life to be a Malak of Yahweh. Yahweh bless. Shabbat shalom.